This is an iHeart podcast.
The big deal we don't talk about enough. We'll talk about these inflation numbers, some bad news out of Arizona. There's a ton to get to tonight on I'm Right. Sometimes we make a mistake, you and me, us hyper-political people, we people, I don't know how to say that, I went to community college, whatever. You, me, we pay attention to politics. We know what's going on, we know the players, we know everything, but as I was thinking about this inflation news from today and the consumer prices, it occurred to me that there are times when I miss the real deal, the big deal, where you miss the real deal, the big deal, in this way. I want to explain it in this way. So we talk about the newest headline every day, the newest scandal, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Trump, and all those things, they matter. They're important. What we talk about matters. I'm not putting us down, but we lose sight of the fact that every American citizen, old, young, left, right, middle, black, white, crushed, Christian, Muslim, whatever, every single American citizen is currently watching their life, I don't want to say go away, that's too dramatic, but their standard of living is going down. And many, 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 many Americans are drowning. And we get so lost in talking about the latest bill and taxes and things that gets lost on us. And here's why. Have you ever heard this situation? I'll make it about sports. Here's why this happens to us. Barry Sanders, you remember who Barry Sanders was? If you're old enough, you remember, of course, who Barry Sanders was. He was this amazing running back for the Detroit Lions. And so every now and then it would happen, the Lions would finish a game and they'd lose, and they'd look at the stat sheet and the fans would be yelling the whole game, "Give Barry Sanders the ball!" And they'd look at the plays and Barry Sanders touched the ball 10 times. And then someone would go to the coach and he'd say, "Hey, coach, he's like the best player in the world, and you only gave him the ball 10 times. And the coach really didn't realize it. "Well, I mean, I had studied so much film, and if you really do this and that." Whereas the people in the stands, they weren't involved. They could see because they were on the outside. "Give Barry Sanders the ball." The coach was such an expert, he didn't know. That's what we do with politics. Because right now, people are drowning. This is not something that's coming in the future. Right now, low-income people are drowning. I want you to think about it this way. American citizens and their income level, think about it like a vertical stick, right? And so the bottom is the poorest ones. The top are the richest ones. The water is currently rising, and there are so many people who are already underwater and not making it right now. Maybe that's not you. Maybe it is you. Maybe you're barely making it. Your head's just barely sticking above. Poor people, older retired folks on fixed income, they're already underwater. But it's coming for all of us as the waters rise. 2.9% inflation, okay? That's the nerd number. That's the number year over year. Set that aside, because they lie about everything. Here's the real number. Gas is up 50%. 50%. This is just in the past 4 years, 50%. Electricity, 32%. Matt, producer Matt, just dropped 900 bones on an electric bill. Think about that. Groceries up 21%. Oh, and this all comes with earnings. What you're making is down 3.9%. Okay, those are numbers and percentages and nerd things. Set that aside. What that means is people aren't making it. And aren't making it, it means different things to different people depending on how hard this is hitting you. For some people, and I'm not dismissing this at all, for some people it means no family vacation this year. I'll tell you, we didn't grow up with a bunch of money, but we went on a family vacation almost every year. Sometimes I was driving down to Myrtle Beach for a couple days, but as a family, we'd take a vacation. Time off, time with family. Families are canceling that. They can't do it. Adult children are moving back in with their parents. Parents, retired. That Social Security check isn't cutting it anymore. The part-time job isn't cutting it anymore. They're moving back in with their kids. This is not something that's coming. This is happening right now. This might be happening to you right now. I have a listener to my show, an older couple, farm couple. They're selling off everything they have They've officially maxed out every credit card trying to get through until the end of this. But the end isn't coming. And it won't be an event anyway. We're not going to wake up tomorrow morning and, wow, inflation's way down. That's not how inflation works. We've printed and spent too much money. Now it's going to take a lot of pain, years of it, to get back. And that's if we start doing the right thing now and we haven't even begun. Listen to this woman in Philadelphia. Listen to her suffering.
How hard has inflation hit you?
It hit me hard. It's hitting me hard.
Who do you blame for it?
I blame the federal government at this point. If a working class mom who works as a paralegal cannot buy a $2 bell pepper because it's now $5, imagine a mother living on food stamps. Mm. Imagine a mother who's making minimum wage trying to feed children. Mm. They're killing us without killing us. If you understand that. They're killing us without telling us they're killing us. They're hurting people in ways that they can't help themselves. It's either feed my child or, well, how about feed my children and I don't, but I have to go work.
$5 for a bell pepper. Maybe you heard that and maybe that resonated with you because you're going through the exact same thing. Maybe you heard that and maybe it brought home to you what others are going through because you're blessed enough financially that you're not going through that yet. But you should understand that stick, the income stick we talked about, the waters are rising. Now 40% of Americans worry about paying the bills. 40%. Credit card debt has hit an all-time high, $1.14 trillion with a T. That doesn't mean people are buying Lamborghinis, although I'm sure there's some of that in there. People are maxing out their credit cards to make ends meet, to try to get through it. Now, this is the part, I'm going to pause on all this for a second, and I'm going to discuss something. There's understanding there's a problem, and there's understanding why there's a problem. Buddy of mine was at a party. Daughter was inside making bacon. It was a pool party. Everyone was outside. It's hot here in Texas. Everyone was outside. She was inside making a big old batch of bacon to go with everything else they were cooking, just on the frying pan on the stovetop, right? We've all done it. And bacon gets done. She takes her little fork or tongs. She picks all the bacon up, puts it on a plate, brings it outside. Everyone's outside, right? Woo-hoo-hoo. She brain farts it and leaves the frying pan on. So there's no one in the house to smell the smoke as things start getting smoky. And there's no one in the house at first to see the flames that begin to grow on the stovetop. Finally, someone looks in. Oh, my gosh, the house is on fire. Now, here's the thing. Everyone can run inside, and they did, and notice. Everyone can see the smoke, the flames. Everyone knows things are on fire. The question is, how do you solve the problem? There will be some people in there who believe you solve it by filling up a jug of water and dumping it on there, which of course will only make a grease fire worse. And then there are others who know to grab the fire extinguisher, some baking soda, whatever, to put out a grease fire. Back to the economy. Everyone knows, Republican, Democrat, rich, poor, top, bottom, middle, everyone knows things are more expensive and things are bad. That's not the problem. The problem is how many people understand it's the government's fault. How many people understand that it's that $1 trillion bill you didn't really care about. That's why you can't afford eggs. It's the money printing by the trillion. That's why you can't afford your power bill. The United States government's spending and printing is the reason your life is more expensive. And unless your cries of pain are also matched or also paired with cries to reduce government spending, then you aren't trying to solve a thing and nothing will change. And how bad are people suffering? Well, this is probably the biggest thing for me. Because it's one thing to get these new reports all the time. Oh, inflation's 2.9% and power's up 32%. It's one thing to nerd out on details. The details that matter are details like this. In recent weeks, we've had gigantic corporations like McDonald's and now Home Depot coming out and saying people aren't shopping. and I need to explain this, these big mega corporations, they track everything. When you get to that level as a company, you have entire divisions of people dedicated to tracking everything. They understand that in July of 2022, they sold 24.5% more wood screws than they did of July in 2021. They understand every comparison, every chart, every graph. They chart absolutely everything. And Home Depot says people aren't spending. People aren't buying those wood screws anymore. McDonald's has come out and said people aren't spending. McDonald's, for basic low-cost items, people aren't spending. And it's not just where we're at. It's that nobody is currently bailing the water. The water levels are just rising, and they're all adding to it. In the meantime, we might be 90 days away from Kamala Harris being elected president, God forbid. But if we do, look, this is the woman who might take over the reins.
Economy is one of the voters' top concerns. Obviously, polls out today show inflation is slowing. Yeah. Why do you think, though, with recent polling numbers, that potentially the policies maybe aren't resonating with some of the base or some of the Americans here in the United States?
Listen, first of all, I think that we know that it takes time for people to feel the policies.
Of course. They're not going to own anything. They're certainly not going to change anything. They'll just give these completely dishonest answers. Oh, you just need some more time. Give it some more time. Don't worry that you can't afford to feed your family. And look, this is why I know it's a nerdy thing. I know a lot of people don't talk a lot about spending. There are sexier topics, but I've been screaming about this forever. For years, I've been saying stuff like this. The GOP lined up for the last 4 years. 4 years. And voted yes, and voted yes, and voted yes, and voted yes on multiple massive spending bills. Truth is, no one cares. And no one's going to care until the whole house of cards come crashing down. And everyone's going to look around and they're going to say, well, how'd this happen? How'd this happen? Now, well, here's the hard truth of it. Talk about making you uncomfortable. Here's the hard truth of it. When that happens, you and I will both have to go look in the mirror and say, that's on me. I never demanded better, so I never got better. You get what you get. Don't throw a fit. Is spending an issue for you in this election cycle or any election cycle? When your Republican congressman, senator, president, when he signs a $1 trillion bill, do you get mad or do you make excuses? Well, that's the reason you can't afford eggs. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Peter St. Ange with Heritage is going to join us next and talk about how and why the spending is absolutely burying us. Before he does that, speaking of spending, stress, you need to sleep. We all are going to need to be better rested in these times. And sometimes we want to take things, sometimes we have to take things to help us get to sleep. It can happen when stress levels rise, after all. Go get some dream powder from Beam. It's natural. It's melatonin, things like that. And you see, dream powder, it makes you feel good when you wake up. Not groggy, not tired. That's the difference. There are lots of things that can help you sleep. Only dream powder makes you feel good when you wake up. Now, 40% off because they understand things are tough. Times are tough right now. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly gets you that deal. We'll be back.
Prices for everyday things like groceries are still too high. You know it and I know it. You know, when I was Attorney General, I went after price fixing schemes. And when I am president, it will be a day one priority to fight to bring down prices.
Yes, yes, I'm sure they're sitting around stressed about you not being able to afford eggs anymore. Joining me now, Peter St. Ange, economist with the Heritage Foundation. He's been all over this for the longest time. Peter, I talked a little bit in the opening about this, of everyone knows prices are up. Everyone can see Republican, Democrat, left, right, middle. Everyone knows things are more expensive. That's not difficult. What's difficult is getting people to understand it's government spending and printing causing all this. That is the disconnect here.
Yeah, absolutely. That is what's driven it from the start. You know, that kicked off during COVID when they spent several $1 trillion to buy the lockdowns. That led to a 40% increase in the money supply. So about $1 in $3 had fresh ink on it. And just like clockwork, we then got near 10% inflation for it. The problem here, of course, is that Kamala is just repeating the decades-long scapegoat, trying to blame companies for the inflation that's caused by government printing money. She, of course, has no plan to decrease government spending. If anything, she has been so far to the left of Joe Biden on both taxes and at least energy. So we can actually expect her to spend more and create more inflation.
Peter, do you think, I almost hate to use the term, it's so overused, but do you think Americans are starting to understand government is the reason they can't afford things anymore? Because that is what drives me crazy. Yeah, Democrats are bad. Republicans are pretty much just as bad when it comes to spending. But people don't seem to vote with their wallet. We have another poll just came out. Everyone knows prices are high, but they don't intend to vote with their wallet. Why?
Yeah, I mean, really, I blame media. About half the country, I think, does understand what's happening. They understand that government is causing it. The problem is that the other half of the country still believes what media tells them. And media is, it's not really almost a Republican or a Democrat thing. Media is the pro-government party. Government media wants more spending. It wants to cover up what's causing the inflation. So they will try to sugarcoat all of these numbers in the way that works best for the uniparty. And when it comes to inflation, you know, we've seen it, it was Putin's price hikes for a minute there. It was people buying too much on Amazon. It was the boat stuck in the Suez, right? It's every excuse under the sun, except for the one thing that's actually causing inflation, by the way, has caused inflation for thousands of years, which is printing the money. And both parties want to keep doing that. Right. As long as there's ammunition for Ukraine, the Republicans are happy to sign on to any spending bill. It's really a uniparty issue. And in terms of regular voters understanding that, I think that comes down to the media. 80% of the media wants to carry water for more government spending for the uniparty.
Peter, I've asked about the mentality of this before, but I really am curious what you think these people think. Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter who they are in Congress, president. They know these numbers. They know what's causing it. They understand all this, and yet they don't want to stop. None of them want to stop. None of them even want to slow down. Do they just not care?
Yeah, I think it's a problem with our political system in many ways. So if you are running an election and the other guy is promising to throw a party and you're promising to pay for last year's party, no party, we're going to pay for it, we're going to pay off the credit card, who's going to win that election, right? So the problem fundamentally is that voters do not feel like the spending is real. They don't feel like the deficit is real until they start feeling that, which historically takes a crisis. Until they start feeling that, they're not actually going to vote for the fiscally responsible candidate. If voters are not choosing the fiscally responsible candidate, then it is political suicide to try to go that route. So instead, the parties are essentially doing what voters have told them to do, which is spend as much as possible, just put it on, you know, either military if you're on one side of it, on welfare or importing migrants if you're on the other side of it. But there's no space in there for fiscal responsibility because voters aren't demanding it. They're not demanding it, as you say, partly because they don't understand how it works. The media has deceived them. The public education system has deceived them. Partly because so much of it is going, you know, it just goes into deficits. $2 trillion deficit, $3 trillion deficit. What's the difference for the average voter? They don't feel it yet. Eventually they will. And then, of course, we'll get, you know, media telling us how nobody could have possibly seen this coming. But unfortunately, that takes time.
Peter, we now know the interest on the debt has gobbled up half of the government revenue. That is just such a staggering. For the month of July, they gobbled up half the government revenue. Now, please act like I don't know anything, which is not a difficult thing to imagine. Could you explain what exactly that means?
Yeah, so it means that every dollar that you are paying the IRS, 50 cents of that is going out in debt interest. So it's going to Wall Street, it's going to China, and it's paying for past deficits, never mind future deficits or current deficits. That's just paying for what we've done in the past. The problem is that that is skyrocketing. So it's up something like fivefold since the beginning of COVID. Eventually, it's not going to be 50 cents. It's going to be 100 cents or 150 cents. It just keeps going up. So at some point, that is not sustainable. Something is going to break there. They are going to be unable to raise that much money in capital markets. That then causes a crisis on government bonds. The interest rates on bonds goes up. The debt interest goes up. We've seen this many times in third world countries where eventually they are unable to issue new debt. They're unable to pay the old debt. You get a debt crisis.
Okay, so what does that debt crisis look like? Because it's obviously coming. Only an idiot would say otherwise.
Yeah, I think it's only a matter of time. You know, we've never been here as a country with deficits this large in relative peacetime. Remember, a recession is coming. By all accounts, a recession will eventually come. Historically, if we go by the past three or four recessions over the past 50 years, those recessions have added about $4 trillion in government spending, if we extrapolate. Okay, so the next recession, we are going to be in absolutely unseen territory. At that point, again, if we go back through history, the government is forced to print more money. That means that the federal government issues more debt, and then the Fed ends up buying it. That's what happened with Japan. So the Bank of Japan currently owns most of the government debt. At that point, it's really just a vicious cycle where the government is printing money. Effectively, it's buying its own money, and it's just doing it back and forth and spreading it out into the economy. Once you get into that trap, you get inflation that gets worse and worse and worse every year. Now, we got there. We got there 50 years ago in the 1970s. What happened in the 1970s is finally we had a Fed chair who said, enough, we're going to break the back of this inflation. And that was Paul Volcker, and he raised rates to, I think it was 17 or 18%, right? So like there were like 20% mortgages, all right? It was very tough. We had two back-to-back recessions as a result. But my concern is that if we get there again, we're not going to be able to get out of there. And the reason is because Paul Volcker, bless his heart, he cost his boss the election. Jimmy Carter got destroyed. I think he won one or two states against Reagan. So Washington is dumb, but they're not that dumb. They're not going to do that again. So my concern is that if we fall back into this 1970s script where we're looking at a decade of inflation and slow growth, I'm not sure that we can get out of it this time.
So we're doomed to just death spiral from here? Is that what you think? I know you're not trying to be Debbie Downer, but if the only solution is a solution that won't be implemented, then there are no solutions?
We would, in order to fix it, you would have to have a politician who gets up there and says, we're going to cut spending by one third. Okay, that's what it would take to end the deficits at this point. So they're collecting something like $4-4.5 trillion. They're spending more like $6.5 trillion. You would have to cut by one third. You would have to, I mean, that's a lot, all right? You would have to essentially close everything but Social Security and minimal border defense, all right? It is pretty close to impossible. Moreover, if you suggest that, you are going to get slaughtered in the election. They're going to go through line by line. They're going to say, what about the poor children who can't afford their, you know, infant formula. I mean, they're going to go through a list of about 10,000 things that the government spends money on that are sympathetic. They're going to ignore the other million things that none of us want the government to be spending on. But anyway, that's the game that's played. So if you look at the political calculus of it, it's very hard to see how somebody can come in here and cut the spending. Now, we could fix it structurally. Okay, one idea, Warren Buffett, his idea is that you tell Congress, you pass one law, and that law says if Congress cannot balance the budget, then they all have to resign their seats and they have a lifetime ban from politics. So that's the Buffett rule. I love that one. That one would work, but good luck getting that one through. The other possibilities might be, you know, a balanced budget amendment where Congress has to balance the budget every single year. Again, that's been tried many times. For obvious reasons, Congress doesn't want to play ball because they love spending all that money. That's the reason they come to work. It's the reason they get political donations. It's why they're there in the first place. So really, you would either need some kind of structural change like that, or you would need some kind of maverick to come in there and actually say, we're going to slash spending. For that, I think in both cases, realistically, our best odds are if we get a crisis, then voters are ready for change. That's what happened with Ronald Reagan. Media, you know, did the same game on him as they did on Trump. They said he's a radical, he's going to destroy the country, he's crazy, he's going to start World War III. Exact same playbook as they do today. But guess what? Americans were desperate enough in the 1970s that they said, enough, we need somebody new. Now, Ronald Reagan did not cut spending, it's true, but he did grow the economy so that the economy could end up growing into the debt. That's probably the best case scenario.
Well, fingers crossed. Peter, you were always awesome. Thank you, brother. All right. We have a panel discussing some Arizona problems. We need that state. We'll talk about that in a moment. Before we talk about that, let's talk about your cell phone company specifically. You see, your cell phone's fine, but if it's Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, they're not fine. These companies hate your guts. They take the money you spend every month. You pay your cell phone bill every month, at least I hope you do. They take that money and they use that money against you, against your culture, against your country. They do it all the time. They brag about it publicly. Go look up your cell phone company in Pride Month and tell me what you see. Switch to Pure Talk. Pure Talk's the patriotic cell phone company who loves you. They stand with you. Their CEO is a veteran. They hire Americans. You pay less. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV and switch. We'll be back. Well, we have big news out of Arizona, and honestly, it's not great news. It sounds great right off the bat, but it's not great. There are abortions about to be on the ballot in November. We'll get into the details in a moment, but the commies do this very, very well. They understand how to drive turnout, how to motivate their base, and there's nothing Democrats love more than slaughtering the unborn en masse. And if they put that on the ballot, it gets Democrats to the polls in a Sun Belt state that we really need Trump to win. Remember, if Trump doesn't sweep these Sun Belt states, that means he's got to break off two of the three, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and that's a tough row to hoe. Joining me now, Morgan McMichael, contributor to Turning Point USA, Kaylee McGee-White, senior fellow, Independent Women's Forum. Okay, Morgan, it sounds good, right? It sounds great. We're going to tackle this pro-life thing, but man, this is the kind of stuff these people love to turn out their voters.
It is. I mean, I'm from Arizona, living there for the past 2 years. And the amount of people that I see out petitioning, trying to get these signatures, which they did get enough signatures to put it on the ballot. What I find incredibly funny is abortion isn't illegal in the state of Arizona. The Democrats want more abortion. They want to kill more innocent lives up until 6 months. 24 weeks is what they're putting on the ballot. Abortion's legal up to 15 weeks in the state of Arizona, but that isn't enough for the Democrats. So now they have to push the envelope even further. And of course, they're hoping that this is going to get the Gen Z and the women vote turnout in the state of Arizona. But I know that us at Turning Point USA and Turning Point Action are doing the work on the ground, Turning Point Action chasing those ballots. So hopefully we can reverse what the left is doing here.
Kaylee, am I thinking about this wrong? Obviously, I'm as hardcore pro-life as you can possibly get. So I want abortion stopped. Should I be excited? This just looks like something that's going to hurt us, though, to me.
Well, it will. And we know that because we've seen historically over the past few years what the abortion amendments do in the states where they're put on the ballot. I'm from Michigan. We had our own abortion amendment on the ballot a couple of years ago. And in large part because of that amendment, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who was pretty unpopular because of her COVID governance, soared to victory by an extremely wide margin that really no one was expecting in the state. And this also has national implications. As you mentioned, the states where abortion is on the ballot are going to be more difficult for Trump to win even though he's tried to pivot to the center on this issue. He had a sort of a, you know, tumble in Arizona not too long ago over their Civil War era law, and he tried to distance himself from that. He tried to encourage Arizona legislators to repeal that and to take a more moderate approach. But it's very difficult when this is Kamala Harris's only issue. She is going to hammer that repeatedly. She already has in her campaign visits to Arizona, and we're going to expect more of that from her in the days ahead.
Morgan, what's it say about us as a country that you can watch that evil tyrant, Governor Whitmer, destroy her state, ban people from buying gardening seeds, yet they will crawl over broken glass to vote for her because she allows them to kill their babies? What does that say about us as a culture now?
I mean, I think it shows just the depravity of society and culture, especially among younger generations. It shows how the feminist movement has truly encapsulated women into being so pro-abortion. I don't think that feminists realize that all of the things that they're supporting are truly anti-women, and we have lost it as a culture. And this continues to snowball effect. I mean, look at also the issue of transgenderism and legalizing having puberty blockers and gender affirming care for young children. You know, I put that on the same page as abortion. It's really just taking away children's innocence and taking away children altogether from mothers. And I really think we need to, as conservatives, speak up and be more proactive in the pro-life movement and not allow these more moderate policies to fly.
Yeah, that's true. I'll tell you something, that is, at least to her credit, that's the only position Dome seems willing to take out there. Other than that, well, this exchange is pretty revealing.
It seems like she has time, if she wanted, to do an interview with a member of the media or do a news conference, correct? There does appear to be that time, if she wanted.
Well, look, she has said on the campaign trail that she would be doing an interview at some point. She said that, I think, last week during a rope line or when she was talking to reporters. But look, what is important here, John, is that she is taking her message directly to the American people. She hit a number of battleground states. I think we had 15,000 people in Detroit last week, 12 to 13,000 in Nevada. She's been taking her message to the voters and drawing large crowds. So she's actually having those direct conversations.
But not today. Not today. She could do an interview today, I would think, you know, because she's not out there today.
Well, look, she's taking her message directly to voters. And just because she doesn't have an interview schedule on her public schedule doesn't mean that she's not taking her message directly to voters.
Kaylee, what do you make of this campaign they're running, a campaign based on nothing? They won't take public positions on policy. They won't actually sit down for interviews. It seems to me like they're banking on the American people being okay with that.
Yeah, it's the revised basement strategy that Biden had back in 2020. And, you know, that CNN exchange, it's pretty pathetic. You know, CNN's host trying to sort of waffle on the issue and be like, oh, well, it seems as if she would have time. No, she does have time. You know that she has time. So say that. And why, furthermore, why aren't they demanding from her campaign spokespeople that Harris sit down with them for a one-on-one interview? Why aren't there reporters chasing Harris down the tarmac to get some answers on these questions? They're letting her ride out this honeymoon period, and they're barely pressing her on any of these important policy issues. And that's why, if you go to Kamala Harris's campaign website right now, there's not a single page on policy. It's only donation tabs. And that is in large part because media outlets like CNN are allowing her to get away with this.
Morgan, a lot has been made of women voters, how you handle that. Well, there were the Vance cat lady comments that, of course, were blown out of proportion by everybody. And then in response to that, the GOP does what it usually does and grabs its ankles for people who hate it. And it had to be all about women outreach and reaching single women. Okay, can we discuss what the GOP should and shouldn't be doing on outreach for their base?
Yeah, I absolutely think that the GOP needs some serious reform, especially when it comes to attracting women voters and young voters. Look at the strategy that the Harris campaign has been using on social media, absolutely taking over platforms like TikTok. And if you think about it, there's 41 million members of Gen Z that are going to be eligible to vote in this next election. Why aren't conservatives doing a better job of talking to us Gen Zers. We need to be the ones that are actually curating trends and participating in trends and exposing what the left is promoting. And like you guys said, you know, Harris has zero policies present or transparent with any of the American people. She's going out and doing these huge rallies with multiple women there and not talking about anything to them other than, hey, we're going to legalize abortion and reverse Roe v. Wade. And that's really not a policy to run an entire campaign on. And I really think they're just riding on the coattails of, you know, we are the social justice campaign. The GOP, I think, really needs to just be talking to female voters more and ensuring that vote, because otherwise the left is going to continue to dominate those voter blocks.
Kaylee, what is that message to women voters that would bring out the women vote?
Well, I think we need to be clear about which kind of women we're appealing to, because the only demographic that tends to lean liberal out of all married men, married women, and single women is single women. Married women aren't the problem. Married men tend to vote much more conservative than single women. And not to be too cynical here, but I actually don't think the Republican Party should revise its campaign strategy to only appeal to single women. I do think to a certain extent we need to give up on that demographic and push for more cultural change instead. Because the single best indicator of whether a woman is going to vote in a conservative manner is if she gets married, if she has kids, if she invests in things that are worth her time and effort, like her community, her church, her family. That is the ground game for Republicans moving forward. It's not changing our policy positions to try to win over the elusive childless cat ladies. It's actually pushing for long-term systemic change that will make a difference in women's lives and more than just their politics.
Yeah, it's a cultural change more than politics. Ladies, thank you. I appreciate it. All right. Let's talk about some overseas things, because there's a lot going on overseas. Victoria Coach joins us next.
We're mobilizing a whole-of-country effort to cut American cancer deaths in half by 2020 and within 25 years.
Okay. Joining me now, Victoria Coates, VP of Foreign Policy at Heritage Foundation. The only reason I played that for you is we have a carrier group in the Middle East right now. Ukraine is officially in control of 390 miles of Russia, and we don't have a president. Who's running the country? Victoria, who's running the country right now? Who gave the order to the carrier group? Does anyone actually know?
This is a huge concern because at this point, the president seems completely checked out. We have pictures of the commander-in-chief of the United States snoozing soundly on the beach over the weekend. I've never seen a picture of an American president sleeping before. I mean, obviously, they have to sleep. But, I mean, this isn't something you advertise in a time of crisis. And as you say, Jesse, I mean, we have massive assets flowing into the Middle East. We have a potential attack by the Iranians on Israel. We have the situation in Ukraine, and nobody's even talking about the Pacific. And we're not sure who's calling the shots. Do we have four hands on the wheel, which is deeply dangerous? Is the vice president calling the shots? It's very murky, and that makes the situation we're in all the more perilous.
No, it really does. Okay, Victoria, break down for us. What's going on with Iran and Israel? Iran has all this bluster. Israel assassinates a bunch of people. That was really cool, by the way. And Iran says, you're going to die, kill all the Jews, and all the stupid stuff they normally say. But this attack has still not come. It's been, a week now? It's still not come. What are they doing? Preparing?
It's actually 2 weeks, and there are two possibilities of what's happened. And what Israel did 2 weeks ago was assassinate Ismail Haniyeh, who was the political head of Hamas. I actually don't differentiate between the political and the military wings of Hamas. I think they're all terrorists. But in this case, he was technically the political head who had been living in Qatar. He was visiting Iran for the inauguration of Iran's new president, and he was assassinated literally in his bedroom in a safe house. And so the Israelis demonstrated an ability, which they have demonstrated before, but this was a very dramatic example of it, of being able to reach into Iran and touch senior leadership who are technically very well protected. And so I think that should be what we'd think of in a sports analogy as being a brushback pitch for the Iranians. They were very startled and very concerned. And if the United States had leaned in hard at the same time and said, oh, by the way, we fully back Israel, you guys should back down, de-escalate, I think we would have more clarity on our situation. But we're now 2 weeks out from that. So either they are backing down or they're preparing something that's more substantial than what they did in April. And we're unfortunately in the position of just having to wait and see. We're not shaping events at all.
Oh, okay. I have too much I need to get to with you, Victoria. I could just stay with you for an hour on this stuff. But ISIS, there are rumors now of an ISIS resurgence, reemergence, however you want to use that word, in Syria. Please don't tell me these scumbags are coming back.
Unfortunately, the scumbags are back in town. And what we're seeing is we'd started to see some burblings from ISIS in Africa. We just had the spectacle of all the Taylor Swift concerts being canceled in Vienna because of ISIS in Europe. And now we have reporting that they are reemerging in the site of their former caliphate. And the reason this is so maddening is when President Trump came into office, one of the first things he did, I remember clearly in January of 2017, is he went to the Pentagon, gathered the Joint Chiefs in the tank, and said, okay, let's defeat ISIS. Let's not inconvenience them. Let's not manage them. Let's defeat them. We got to wipe this caliphate off the map. And the United States military performed brilliantly as they did. And we were successful in 6 months. What you have to do is give the military the tools they need, give them a specific mission, let them complete it, and then end the mission so we don't drift into these endless wars. And it was one of the great things anyone's ever done for the region. Nobody likes ISIS, even ISIS doesn't like ISIS. They're awful. So this was very positive. But in the permissive atmosphere that's been created by President Biden and Vice President Harris, you know, there isn't that kind of strong approach. They've reverted to the Obama playbook, which was managing a problem rather than solving it. And so that's what they're doing. And we have heaven knows how many U.S. troops in Syria. They've been there for a decade. It's not clear under what authorities. And I'm just deeply concerned that they're big enough to be a target, but not big enough to actually defend themselves effectively.
Victoria, should I be thrilled or terrified that Ukraine has launched an offensive into Russia? By the way, I applaud them for it. You can't play defense the whole time. But Ukraine controlling 390 miles of Russian territory is not something Russia is going to stand for. They'll do anything to stop that. Should I be worried?
Again, this is another example of the situation getting out of U.S. control because we're not exerting firm leadership. And we at Heritage have had concerns about the Biden-Harris prosecution of the Ukraine war from the earliest days. Their approach has been to sort of incrementally help Ukraine, but never enough to win the war. Had we gone in 2 years ago, absolutely demanded of our European allies that they take the lead of what was the last time I looked at a map, a war in Europe, but we would help them get to victory in under a year. But what we've done, as I said, is sort of dribble and drabble out support and then sort of lift these restrictions. It's not clear why the restrictions were on in the first place, but it doesn't seem to be happening strategically. And so, you know, I agree, you know, I don't have tremendous respect for Russia's sovereign boundaries because they don't have respect for anybody else's. But yes, that kind of incursion into Russia, while Russia is also making advances in eastern Ukraine, creates a very fluid dynamic, and our president's asleep on the beach.
Oh. Victoria, thank you. Come back soon, please. We don't have a commander-in-chief right now. Just think about that. All this stuff going on, we don't even have a commander-in-chief. Whatever. We need to lighten the mood. Let's do one of those. Next. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And this is such wonderful news. I'm just bubbling with joy here. There's going to be a lot more me out there. Now, let me clarify. The First TV, now it's available in 7 million more homes than it was before. First TV partnered with HC2 Broadcasting. What does that mean? It may not mean anything to you. Well, allow me to read a little list. Houston, Dallas, Atlanta, Phoenix, Tampa, Minneapolis, Charlotte, St. Louis, Philly, New York City. That's where you can watch the first. This is in addition to DirecTV, DirecTV Stream, Samsung TV Plus, UVerse, Pluto TV, Fubo TV, and many other fast channel platforms. Essentially, this is a long way of me telling you, I'm not going anywhere. We here at the first, we're not going anywhere. We're gonna keep bringing you everything we've been bringing you, and we're gonna bring it to a lot more people, all right? I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.